A dear friend, a stellar musician, and one of the most humble and uplifting individuals I've ever known, Alex Wasili is someone I'm blessed to have been connected with for over 20 years. We first met in our second grade teacher, Miss Israel's class, in our hometown of Savannah, Georgia, and became fast friends. Alex and I continue to go to school together throughout middle school and high school, staying friends through the way. After high school, Alex went to school in Chicago at DePaul University to study trombone and music, and I joined the Army after some time in college. 5 years ago, we came back into each other's lives, sometime after he joined one of the most grooving bands around, Dumps the Funk, and I went to see their show at Washington, D.C.'s own Gypsy Sally's. I was so blown away by the performance that I went to another show of theirs the very next night at Baltimore's 8x10. But that's just the kind of show Dumps the Funk provides anyone who attends. They always leave you wanting more. With Dumps the Funk, Alex has shared the stage with the likes of Yes, Carlos Santana, Tower of Power, and even the Dave Matthews Band, in addition to opening up for none other than the Rolling Stones. He's also played with groups like The Main Squeeze, performed DJ sets as part of his Very Good Party and Very Good DJ Set series, given masterclasses and musical performance to schools all over the country, and most of all, is a genuine and kind human being. In our time together for Unlocking the Keys, Alex shared some beautiful nuggets of musical wisdom, gave insights, and was just an all-around wonderful hang as always. Hope you enjoy, and please follow Unlocking the Keys wherever you hear podcasts for more episodes just like this, in addition to finding me, Link Bradham, on social media. And now, let's unlock the keys together with Alex Wasili as our guest. Mr. Wasili, Alex Wasili, the man himself, thank you so much for being here today. So grateful to have you on this first season of Unlocking the Keys. Our history goes way, way back. But as for today, how you doing, man?
Great, man. Dude, thanks for having me here. I'm happy to be part of Unlocking the Keys. Anything from my boy Link, dude, whatever you need, here for you.
Dude, super, super appreciate it. And I think it goes without saying, anybody who has known you for any amount of time, be it like 1 year, 5 years, I think for us, it's getting to be like 20 or 25 years.
What? Second grade, yeah.
Second grade, yeah. So we've broken 20. We're at like 21 right now. So all of that is to say that, you know, it's just always been the case, no matter who it is, anybody trying to make their way into the music world, find their sound, find their scene, whatever the case may be, you're there. And so I'm super grateful, but I also know that's just like who you are.
Too kind, man. You are too kind. I'm just trying to give back to a world that has given me everything, man. So anything I can do to help at any time, please, you know, anyone listening right now, hit me up. I'm here to help you. So,
you heard it right here from the horse's mouth. Anything you need musically, Alex has got the goods. And you know, man, even with knowing each other for so long, I actually don't know how you got your start playing trombone.
Funny story, actually. This is one of my favorite things ever, right? So I played saxophone in fifth grade with Mr. Murphy. I played sax until eighth grade. And then in ninth grade, my band director, the legendary Michael Hutchinson out of Savannah Arts Academy, told all the parents of all the incoming freshmen that they needed trombone players. And so my mom went out and bought me a trombone without really asking, do you want to switch? Because like, if you know trombone and saxophone, you know they are not similar even remotely. And she set me up with lessons with Carl Polk, and I sort of fell in love with it pretty quickly. And I was able to advance relatively quickly on the horn because I had the first, second, third, and fourth all-state trombone players sitting to the right of me in band class. So I got to kind of come up under them. But the day I decided I wanted to be a musician, There was this legendary Baptist church in Savannah, Georgia, where we grew up, me and Link. And it's called St. John the Baptist, a mighty fortress. Mighty Fortress is the name of the joint. It's like 5-hour gospel church services on Sundays with like, it's just like a party. And I showed up and my friend Vern Tremble asked me to play for this like clinic with this gospel Grammy Award winner named James Bignon. And he was doing a clinic with the choir and I just got to like play horns and I didn't have to read any music. And I was just listening and playing what sounded good. And I was 15 years old. It's crazy. It's like a, you know, as a kid being in that situation with killer musicians. Anyway, so I got invited on this tour, this 5-day tour of the South with James Bignon. And I was part of the band and I, you know, got a little hotel room and like, it was my first ever tour and I didn't really know what I was doing. I was just kind of tagging along and just like, you know, playing horns. And after the week was over, a couple of weeks later, I got a check in the mail for $500. And when you're 15, dude, you know how, I don't know if you know how many packs of Skittles that is, but that's a lot of Skittles. So I was so hyped. I was like running around like, Mom, I got paid $500 for like playing music. What is that? And she said, yo, man, maybe you should be a musician if you love it so much. And that ever since then, it was just kind of like, wow, this is so much fun. I can't believe I get to, you know, make money doing it. Is it always really easy? No. In fact, most of the time it's quite difficult, but it's still the most satisfying thing. It is ingrained in my identity. And I love every minute of it. So that's kind of how I got my start. There's a lot longer version of that story that involves some of the antics on the road and stuff, but that's pretty much it. So
really funny. And dude, it's funny to think, cause like $500 back then was like $1,000 today or something crazy because of all the inflation. And you know, man, it's funny cause I remember you always playing saxophone back in the day. And that we both had like braces.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, and I remember there was like something with like the reed or like something that had to do with like you playing sax for braces or something.
Yeah, the braces. I remember I couldn't play brass because of braces. That was like a thing because like the pressure, you know, that you're putting on there, you cut your lips or whatever. So the reeded, you know, woodwind instruments were the way to go, and I loved saxophone, you know, did Allstate on saxophone and thought I was going to be a Barry sax player my whole life. And then that changed.
So that's what it was. Yeah. I remember there was like something that you couldn't play or something because of the braces. And so it was the brass because of the embouchure or whatever.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned you thought you'd always be like a Barry sax player. And then for those of us who got to see on Instagram Live the other day, we got to see you shredding on trumpet.
Yeah, man. Tom Sommer just sent me a trumpet recently because I asked for one. And I, it's been a fun quarantine project, man, just learning another instrument. And for anyone who's a low brass player, I highly recommend you pick up a trumpet. It will whoop your booty, dude. It is so difficult. And it's like running with ankle weights, honestly. It's done wonders for my trombone playing. But yeah, playing other instruments is important. It's good to know and respect other musicians for what they have to go through.
Yeah, man. And it's a great segue into the next question, which, well, first off, do you play any other instruments? I mean, that's already such a long list, like trumpet, sax, trombone. For like any musician, that's a lot.
Can't say I could play a professional performance right now on trumpet or saxophone. I can definitely play scales on saxophone. Don't tell me this, dude. I will get a saxophone. I will start shedding it. I really just stick to trombone, man. I'm lucky enough to say I can just stick to trombone. If I need to in a certain setting, I can plink out some chords on keys, but nothing really professionally. You know, I can't advertise that I do anything else. I do, however, professionally do DJ sets and stuff. So if you ever need a DJ for anything like that, as you were listening to the other day, but yeah, I pretty much stick to trombone, man. Yeah.
Well, you brought up something really interesting there, which that's, you know, the next question, which is what do you think musicians of like other instruments can learn from each other?
I would say, so perfect example, just the other day, one of my teachers, I guess you could call him, he's a dear friend, but he's been kind of a trumpet teacher to me. His name's Constantine Alexander, dude out of Chicago. He's a killer educator, but even a more killing performer. He'd be pissed if I called him an educator. Dude can play. but he, I called him the other day and I was so excited. I was playing along with some Count Basie records and I realized on trumpet while playing that you get to play the melody. You get to play the melodic line. You're not playing the second or third harmony or the inner parts or whatever. So that is like that alone, right? The trumpet in a section of three horns generally is playing the melody and the sax plays a note above or below and the trombone plays a note below generally or like follows the root. So learning little things like that, you know, where everyone fits in the piece of the puzzle is so important to know. If you're going to be in a band, if you're going to just play by yourself, it's cool to know that. But if you're going to play with other human beings, which all of us do, is like, that's part of the magic of music is, you know, communicating without words. But it's being able to know where everyone fits in the puzzle and how you contribute to the end picture is so important. And learning another instrument and physically feeling the pain of another instrument, you know, whether it be blisters on your hands from bass, blisters on your hands from drums, or your lips hurting from trumpet, whatever, like knowing the pain and being able to respect other people's, you know, instrumental challenges, is, I don't know, it can't hurt you. That's for sure. It can only help you.
Most definitely. And dude, it's funny. You know, I was, talking to somebody who you know very well the other day, Mr. Steve Swatkins, and it's on his episode of Unlocking the Keys where he talked about as far as keyboardists specifically, we kind of have like a different thing where, you know, we don't really have a lot of, you know, physical exertion that comes into playing, you know, I guess I remember when I was a kid doing glissandos on like the piano, kind of ripping my hand up sometimes. But for a lot of times, what we struggle with is just playing too many notes. Cause all we're doing is just like, is like pressing a button. There's no like, you know, breath control or any of that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah. But if you're playing a keyboard, you got to get the sound right. You know, you have to get the appropriate sound for whatever you're playing. Not to mention, as a someone who plays an analog instrument, a trombone, like in comparison, I never have to worry about a tube blowing up in an amp. You know, I never have to worry about a cable going bad. I never have to worry about a frayed power cable. I never have to worry about a sound bank getting deleted or whatever, you know, like that, you know. So being patient with a keyboard player who's just had that happen to them, you know, you should know that that happens for those of you listening, anyone thinking about it. So electrical gremlins are something that I'm so proud to never have to deal with.
Dude, that's so kind of you to mention, because like, I can't count the number of times it's happened on a gig that like, you know, your sound is gone or a quarter inch cable died or, you know, whatever.
A hostile buzz out of your instrument. Just yeah, it's
yeah, worst, man. I mean, it's like just the other day, my audio engineer, great friend Colin, amazing engineer in the DC scene, we were trying to record a Fender Rhodes through a twin and it just starts humming for like no reason.
Right. If it can break, it will.
Totally. And really appreciate your insight there, just because, you know, we all musicians have our own struggles and that we should just be gentle with each other when they come up. Great advice. And so I'm curious, you know, your music covers such a wide variance of genres, everything from like funk to hip hop to rock to jazz to like even like electronica with like your DJ sets. So like with such a wide range of skills and genres that you play, who are some of your biggest influences?
Yeah, man. I mean, like it all goes back to what one of my mentors told me. I'll answer the question in a second, but something that one of my mentors, Marcus Carroll in Chicago, trumpet player, played fifth trumpet in the Count Basie Orchestra for a while. Incredible human, educator, musician. When I was 18 years old, I remember he asked me, I like walked into a bar with him and he was like, so what do you do, man? And I said, oh, I'm a jazz trombonist. And he looked me dead in the eyes and he said, no, you are not. And I was just like, yo, what? Who's this dude telling me what's up? He said, you're a person first. You're an artist second. You're a musician third. You play trombone fourth and fifth. You better be able to play whatever the hell they put in front of you. And that was like one of the biggest, like, I was 18. I'm so glad he said it then. It like completely switched my whole, it like reprogrammed me in an instant. It couldn't be more true, man. It's important to be able to play any style, any genre, You know, if you're doing something, any kind of production, if you have to be versatile. You can't afford, if you're going to be a professional musician, you cannot afford to just pigeonhole yourself. That being said, is it good to be a specialist in certain genres? Absolutely. You know, like people call me generally when they know they need some sort of New Orleans style, loud trombone, funk, whatever, you know, rock, hip hop, rock, funk, soul, R&B. That's definitely my specialty. But if you call me to play an Easter gig, playing whole notes and half notes on my big horn, you know, damn right, I'm going to be able to play that. Like, absolutely. So, you know, it's just important for anyone who's listening, if you plan on being a musician, to study all the genres and to study them correctly. To answer your question, though, who are some of my biggest influences musically speaking? It sounds like such an easy catch-all answer, but dude, Earth, Wind & Fire is, in my opinion, that is the best band. The fact that I can listen to their records and say to myself, oh my God, this is original music. You know what I mean? Like, somebody wrote every single arrangement. It's flawless. They cover all genres, all boundaries. They have brass chorales. They have string sections. They have full on disco records, you know, almost, or not, maybe not full disco, but like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they cover so many genres. And tied with them, I would say Sly and the Family Stone as well. Sly and the Family Stone. If you want to be a musician, you should listen to Sly and the Family Stone. They're a band that is so cross genre, obviously Bay Area funk, of course, but you know, it's a band that crossed a lot of boundaries. They had a lot of, people of different colors in their band throughout their existence. They wrote about a lot in terms of songwriting, the lyrics and the message of the music is almost just as important as the groove. It's all about peace and harmony and family and love, and taking care of yourself. So, and same with Earth, Wind & Fire. I mean, the lyrics couldn't be more uplifting, and it's a lot about looking deep inside yourself and pulling out the best parts of you. So both of those bands, I can't say enough good things about in terms of how they've molded me as a musician, for sure. Definitely biggest influences.
For sure. And it's, you know, it's interesting to note, the two bands that you mentioned, they themselves cover such a wide variance of genres and have reached such a wide range of people. Like, even hip hop producers, you know, talk about like Sly.
It's like the most sampled band, like, of all time. And them and James Brown, of course, James Brown too. I mean, no question. But I think Sly and Earth, Wind & Fire just speak to me a little bit. Just more than most. Like, if you catch me with headphones on, which is rare, if I'm like on a jet or whatever, on a plane or whatever the hell, I'm probably listening to an Earth, Wind & Fire or a Sly record. So yeah.
Really, really cool. And you know, with that, we'll just move into a segment of the show that I'm very excited to have with some of the guests this season, which is, you know, if you could name any five, no right or wrong answer, and anything up to and including five, it could be, you know, two, three, whatever, Desert Island albums, what would those be?
Oh, for sure. Well, there's of course, That's the Way of the World by Earth, Wind & Fire. That is one of, I think that is close to a perfect record, as there can be, in terms of the way it ebbs and flows, the songwriting, the length. I think it's amazing. I could listen to that record every single day. Odds are, if I'm in a green room or something and there's a record player and they have that record in there, I'm going to go and pick it up and play it. You know, like, they have those, you know, those, like, an old green room vinyl with like a broken needle. It's like, I'm going to go disrespect this record by playing it on a broken broken vinyl player. Whatever. Yeah, so That's the Way of the World, Earth, Wind & Fire. I would say Sly and the Family Stone, maybe Stand. Yeah, it's tough. That's tough. I think more affirmative for perfect record as well is Voodoo by D'Angelo. That record, I think the most perfect song in the world is Spanish Joint. I think that is a perfect song, in my opinion. Yeah, I would say D'Angelo, Voodoo, That's the Way of the World, by Earth, Wind & Fire. And you know what? No, Fresh by Sly and the Family Stone. I would say Fresh. I don't know. It's just great funk music that is genius level, in my opinion. It's such a good record, man. And it's such a statement piece. The time that it came out in, it was very fresh. You know, it's grown folks music, man.
Great, great picks. And, you know, with those three, I don't think you even need five. You know, just awesome all around. And when it comes to rewarding musical experiences, I think listening to some albums like that, some of those very, very classic albums, whether it's Earth, Wind & Fire, That's the Way of the World, Sly with Fresh, or D'Angelo with Voodoo, I think some of our most formative, rewarding experiences as musicians come when we first listen to music. But now you're getting to have all of these amazing, really cool, rewarding experiences. Anybody who follows you on social media gets to see the really fun Forever Airport, hashtag Forever Airport posts that you'll do that are just, you know, really, really fun. Almost we get to live like vicariously through you.
Yeah, thanks, man. That's, you know, that's sort of the idea. But yeah, I'm grateful to get to travel as much as I do, man. It's one of the best parts of playing with a band.
Yeah. And so with all of those amazing, rewarding experiences that you're getting to have, could you share with us, you know, maybe if you can't pick just one, that's okay. But, you know, maybe a couple, or your favorite, or, you know, most dear to your heart, rewarding musical experience thus far.
Yeah, I can give you at least one that comes to I generally go with first impulse, first instinct. And that would be last year, like, or right before 2020, is like December 29th or 30th. I have the show posters somewhere, but so I play with a band called Dumpster Funk out of New Orleans, for anyone listening. It's, in my opinion, one of the best funk bands on earth. I'm so proud to play with them. They're the shit. They know they've done their homework. They're the OGs of New Orleans, and I'm grateful to be along for the ride playing with them, man. But Dumpster Funk had the distinct pleasure and honor of playing the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco with this horn section from Tower of Power and the drummer David Garibaldi from Tower of Power. That gig, I don't know that there's, as a horn player, there are a couple, you know, icons in the world of music, and Tower of Power is without a singular doubt one of those. So getting to stand shoulder to shoulder with the, you know, with Emilio, who, you know, and Doc, who, like, the dudes who started that band, who changed the face of how horn playing is today. And to have them tell me great job, and then have them arrange me my own part that fit in with their harmonies for that particular specific gig. And then a month later to have them asked to come sit in with Tower of Power. That I think is probably up there for, and for any, you know, musician, let alone a horn player. It was a major, major moment. And I'm, you know, I still have a great relationship with those dudes. We chat every now and then, which is just crazy to say out loud. What the hell? But they are, I learned so much from them on that gig, just like being around them, the way that they attack notes, the way, you know, just musical nerd stuff, the way that they're doing, you know, their cutoffs in time, the way that they are just locked together as a section, that musical experience for me is something I will never forget. Easily that one, is the big one. And of course, to play with David Garibaldi, dude writes method books on how to play the drums, and that are, like, widely used, and to play with alongside of him. That gig also, we had Greg Errico, the original drummer from Sly and the Family Stone, playing with Garibaldi, with Dumpster Funk, with the Tower Power horns. So that was a really incredible, rewarding show right before the pandemic. We got that one in late December. And then the summer before that, we got to open for the Rolling Stones, which was epic. Epic levels, like, crazy, you know, all the that stuff. Musically speaking, I think that Tower Power gig, you know, we got to rehearse for like 3 hours with them. And like after the show, you're picking their brain and asking about, you know, they're in the green room telling stories, because Sly is Bay Area funk, Tower Power is Bay Area funk too. So to hear, you know, Mr. Errico and Mr. Garibaldi just like, oh yeah, you remember that one like Woodstock thing? It's like, yeah, like what, you know? Or like, you know, really brief here to anyone listening that, what, you know, who wants to hear a crazy story is I remember asking Greg Errico, like, yo, like what, you know, what crazy, just tell me a crazy story. And he opened up before even telling a story, saying that the thing that like blew my mind is nowadays, if you get a call to go play a festival, like, you know, Swanee, Halloween, or like, or Bonnaroo or something, you generally don't have to worry about your safety, right? I mean, like, it'll be great, it'll be fun, everyone will be, you know, cool. He said that, you know, when they played Woodstock, the concept of being literally electrocuted or burned to death in like a fire was like a regular thing that was happening. Like the stage wasn't grounded and it's all a bunch of metal and wood supports that would fall, you know, collapse and kill you, or like it was like a very dangerous experience. And it's something, and like the incandescent lights, you know, say a light bulb explodes or something and melts and then a fire happens, like, you know, people, there's hundreds of thousands of people in a space that's not meant to hold that many people. Like that, he just opened up the story with that, and that to me, it like shifted gears in my head about, like, you know, what it meant to be a musician back in the day of the 60s and 70s versus today. Like that kind of stuff is just stuff that no one ever thinks about. That really, I don't know, that hit me at 100 miles an hour. I thought that was great.
Wow. That's wild. And it's crazy And a little funny to think as well for anybody who's seen the Woodstock movie, like, not only was all this going on, but then you had the crowd just like climbing on top of all of this stuff when it might explode.
Crazy that they got away with the stuff they got away with and that more people didn't die. But like, you know, we've just come a long way in the music entertainment industry, without a doubt. That was an eye-opening moment to hear that kind of stuff from Greg Rico, for sure.
So, so true. And speaking of live stuff, for anybody who hasn't already seen Dumps the Funk Live, it is an experience. You just heard some samples of them playing live with Alex, and the audio can't even capture just how fun this band is. I mean, quintessential professionals who just know how to have a good time.
We threw a party, man. It's great.
Absolutely. And with that, you know, of course, the podcast is called Unlocking the Keys. It's not just for keyboardists, it's for all musicians. And I hope that everyone listening is getting something out of the wisdom you're sharing, whether they be a musician or a music lover or whatever the case may be. And so one question I like to ask everyone on the show, because everyone on the show either has experience playing with keyboardists or is a keyboardist themselves, I like to ask, what in your mind, when playing with someone, even other than Ivan Neville, because I think we can all agree that Ivan Neville, the key sounds that he brings to Dumps the Funk are just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, unparalleled.
But when playing with someone even other than Ivan Neville on keys, what in your mind separates a good keyboardist from a great keyboardist? What makes a great keyboardist to Alex Wasili?
That's a great question. We actually talked about it earlier, I think, about what separates a great musician from a good musician. I think one of the major things is knowing when not to play, knowing when to take your hands off the instrument, knowing when to take your hands off the keyboard. In fact, Ivan does a whole masterclass called, you know, that he teaches pretty much when not to play. Which is a lot of the time, which is, you know, it's an important lesson to know. But I would say that, you know, that aside, what makes a really exceptional keyboard player is someone who is using, we're talking about keyboards, not piano, we're talking about like keyboards, is you use the electronic elements of the instrument, whether it be, you know, pinning the Leslie at full throttle when the band is in high gear and the energy is there. Like when the organ comes in on during a solo, you know, say, you know, like you're playing clav, whatever, you know, everything's cool. You got like a funky groove going on, but then when the organ comes in, there is a visceral, noticeable experience. The crowd, like the energy perks up. If you're just holding one note, you know what I'm saying? Like holding one note while the band is going off, being able to understand when that happens, when that should happen, when you use that electronic, you know, it's just a turn of a knob for you keyboard players, man. Trombone, I have to like take a huge breath and like, you know, force the air. It's like, it's, you know, but being able to, you know, use the foot pedal or whatever to swell the volume. I think just being able to read the situation that you're in musically speaking and adjust and use all the tools you have at your advantage, or all the tools you have at your fingertips, literally, to bring the energy of something to the next level. That is what makes a really great keyboard player for me. You can be chopsy all you want. You can play all the melodic lines in the world and, you know, shred and what, you know, that's great. But, you know, it's the same thing with guitar. I would rather a rhythm guitarist just absolutely ice the rhythm part and keep it funky and grooving than, you know what I mean? So I don't know. That's to me what separates a great keyboard player from a good keyboard player. So yeah, just knowing when not to play.
Really, really great insight there, man. And, you know, it's really cool you bring up, yeah, like keyboardists, we have so much other than just what notes we play to kind of contribute to the sonic soundscape of what we're providing the band. And it's funny, you know, it kind of reminds me, I don't know if I ever told you this, did I ever tell you about the time that I met Greg Allman after that Allman Brothers show when we were like 13? Have I told you about that?
I don't think so.
Oh yeah, man. It's just this kind of wild. I mean, well, you remember my dad, Billy Bradham.
Billy Bradham, the legend.
Yeah, I mean, definitely a legend in Savannah, Georgia, where like Alex and I grew up, and he's
a music lover.
Oh yeah, he's a huge music lover, and like one of the things I remember being a kid is, you know, he did the floors at the Big House Museum in Macon, Georgia, where the Allman Brothers, you know, all used to live, and one of the things that he worked into the price was he wanted backstage passes and a lesson from Greg for me.
Appreciation, go Billy.
Yeah, and I mean, I still feel so blessed that, so after the show they played in Savannah, we got to go backstage, and I got to meet all of them. I got to meet Derek Trucks, who he was like still super young at the time, like 20 years old or something, and they all like signed this like hat that I have, and I remember the biggest thing being sitting with Greg for about 30 minutes and talking to him about the Hammond B3 organ. And I remember one of the things he told me, he said, just like this, always keep that Leslie Speed switching, my boy. And, you know, and it's funny because I mean, that was one thing, you know, he did, he would not play a lot of flashy, crazy notes or runs. He just play like one note and just like switch the Leslie Speed and get that real, you know, whoa, 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 whoa sound. Yeah. So that was like my first real keyboard lesson.
Oh, man. That's what the great players do, man. You know, and like the great players are in touch with the crowd and in touch with that visceral response. Like I said, like they can feel the energy when it's there, and it's all it is just one note, switching the speed on Leslie, whatever. Like it's, you know, that's what the great players do for sure. I couldn't agree more. That's an awesome story.
Thanks, man. Yeah. I mean, it was an awesome time. And it was, you know, it was thanks to Billy Bradham.
No, that's another thing that's so important too, is like, we don't know as professional musicians, like how much of an effect you have on a kid when you talk to them about what it means to be a musician. You know, like I was telling you, I did that career day thing at like 5 a.m. the other day. Now, you know, I was like, I was bummed to be waking up that early, but at the same time, like you never know, man, one of those kids might be the next Maynard Ferguson. And you just, cause you told them, yeah, man, it's like, check out my cool backstage passes or whatever, you know, like kids love that stuff. And you just don't know what kind of an effect you can have on the future of a potential musician. So just continuing the tradition is just as important as performing.
100%. And you know, it's another great segue into our next section here, which is another thing I like to ask everybody, because you know, you've already shared so much insight here, but that advice that we get from professional musicians, especially when we're in our formative years, is so valuable. And so I want to give you the opportunity, if you could offer one piece of advice to aspiring musicians, young or old, what would that be?
One piece of advice. I would say the word authenticity comes to mind. I give a masterclass called Stop Playing, Start Performing. And a big part of the class is authenticity, which means be the best version of yourself. And understand that if in terms of being a professional musician or building a career or wanting to get fans for your stuff, whatever the hell, even if you're just playing alone, that authenticity is key, and that people are drawn to that authenticity. People are drawn to want to be around people who are themselves, and being, like I said, the best version of themselves. Meaning, you know, if you're the kind of person who likes hurting other people, then don't be yourself. You know what I mean? But like, I that's not who I'm addressing here. You know, I'm talking about take one of my favorite examples is take Dwayne Thomas Jr., also known as Mono Neon. Mono Neon is one of the best bass players alive right now, and he is so authentic and to himself. He wears bright neon clothes, has for years on stage. He is a unique individual, but he is authentic and he is himself. And that is what is, you know, music aside, people are just drawn to him naturally because of what he offers the world, which is incredible musicianship. And he is just, he's himself. So being authentic, being yourself, if you think, oh man, this like you know, what I wrote is corny or what I wrote is lame or whatever, you know, then that's for you to decide, not for anyone else to decide. You know, if you wrote something and someone else tells you it's corny or lame, then you don't need to work with that person. You know, be yourself, be the best version of you. And it can only, you know, it can only help you. It cannot hurt you. And that's something that gets thrown out. So many people are writing songs that, you know, they're trying to fit inside of a bubble. There's enough bubbles for everyone. There's 7 billion people on Earth. Therefore there are 7 billion bubbles. Everyone is different. And that should be celebrated. So yeah, be authentic, be the best version of yourself, whether you're a musician, an artist, not an artist, whatever you're doing. It can only help you. So like I said, a masterclass coming to a university near you, likely in 2021, when we get back on the road heavy. But yeah, it's a huge part of being an artist is authenticity for sure.
Such great insight. I mean, it's just something so important to be reminded of that, you know, it's okay to be ourselves. Like you said, you know, as long as that self isn't someone who wants to take advantage of or hurt people, you know, then just let the freak flag fly.
Look at George Clinton, you know, like we, as my boy Ian said, you know, when we toured with him for like 37 days or something, he told George, thanks for making it cool to be weird, you know, or, you know, thanks for making being weird cool. You know, like you look at a character like that who is unapologetically himself, you know, to the 50th power or whatever, you know, and he had one of the most successful careers of all time. So, you know, be weird, be yourself, let the freak flag fly. Absolutely.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And our time today is coming to a close, sadly, but just, you know, want to thank you for just the golden nuggets of wisdom that you're giving us here. And also want to give you an opportunity to plug all things Alex Wasili. How can people stay up to date on you, on Dumps the Funk, all of those sorts of things?
You can definitely check it out all at alexwasily.com, alexwasily.com. I keep it really updated with all of our shows that we have come through, and some other stuff is in there as well. But yeah, check out dumpsterfunk.com if you want to see where we're playing. We're about to have like the wildest 2 years ever, making up for lost time. We're so excited. We just released a new record called Where Do We Go From Here, on the Mascot label, the Funk Garage Bootsy Collins label. It is kicking ass. We're selling out of vinyl left and right. It sounds great. You can stream it everywhere. But yeah, if you want to check out what I'm doing, like at what Alex is doing, yeah, you can follow me on Instagram or I keep it pretty up to date with goofy airport stories and whatnot. But yeah, those are all really efficient ways. And, you know, reach out to me if you have any questions. I'm readily available via email or DM or whatever the hell. Here for you guys, for sure.
And Alex isn't just saying that. I mean, you know, he's always there anytime. You know, I'm somebody I'm so grateful to call a friend, a mentor in a lot of ways. You know, he's always willing to help anybody who wants it musically or however. And I got to give a plug to that album, by the way. It's a great, great album. Where Do We Go From Here? I've got it on vinyl. It's colored vinyl, which is always cool. This kind of cool gold colored vinyl, double album. Definitely check it out. Already had some great memories listening to that record. And, you know, I think we all got a lot of really, really good insight, information, and just good vibes from you today. So thanks, Alex.
Thanks for having me, dude. Yeah, Link, you're the man. And, you know, keep everyone listening. Check out what Link's doing. Pay attention to what he's doing. So he's doing good stuff for his own community and for communities worldwide. So we're grateful for Link for sure.
I can't thank you enough. And yeah, man, all the love.
Definitely. Talk to you soon, man, for sure.
And there you have it. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Alex Wasili, a wonderful friend and exceptional human being. Since this interview, Dumpsta Funk has partnered with the Dave Matthews Band for two shows in Madison Square Garden, New York, on November 12th and November 13th, 2021. Tickets are on sale now, and you can find more details on davematthewsband.com. Also, Alex will be performing with Dumpsta Funk in many other tour dates throughout the rest of 2021, including Sewanee's Hulaween. Details can be found on Dumpsta Funk social media, in addition to Alex's website, AlexWasily, AlexWasily.com. As always, thank you for listening, and please follow Unlocking the Keys wherever you hear podcasts for more episodes just like this, in addition to following me, Link Bradham, on social media. I hope you have a truly lovely day, evening, or whatever time frame you might find yourself in the present moment. Peace.